say your name and your role?
John McGregor, and I think I'm being interviewed in this one as a former Secretary of State for Education and Science.
Thank you. Did you enjoy history at school and beyond?
Yes, I did actually. First of all, at school, it was one of my favourite subjects. And I think it's the usual thing. It was an inspiring teacher who got me very interested. I mean, no family background in this sort of thing. No, I really enjoyed it at school, so much so that I went on to have history as one of my two main subjects at university. I went first to St Andrews University, and I had a couple of scholarships there, so I had to do the 4 years. And at St Andrews, the first 2 years are taken up with, in my day, were taken up with five subjects, a very broad approach, which I actually later saw the benefits of when I was Secretary of State. And then the last 2 years were specialised. And so, in fact, I did history. I was intending to do history because I was going on to be a lawyer, a Scottish lawyer, and therefore you had to get an MA in those days before you could do the LLB, and I was then going to go to Edinburgh to do the LLB. That didn't transpire for other reasons. But I continued to do history, and it was one of my two honours subjects. It was history and economics. And again, I had an inspiring professor, in particular at St Andrews, Professor Norman Gash, who wrote what was then the definitive work about the Age of Peel. I much admired his approach to history, which was brilliantly, I mean, his factual knowledge was superb, but his interpretation, the way he drew it all together, was absolutely fascinating. And that shows in his Age of Peel. And many years subsequently, that came back because there was a tradition when I joined the cabinet that you donated one book to, it was in a bookcase in number 10, one book, and I chose The Age of Peel. Unfortunately, the hardback copies were out of print by then. But I wrote to Norman Gash, who was still alive, and he was alive, and he was a fair old age then, and I was thrilled to get a letter back from him, which I've got somewhere, saying how delighted and privileged he was to have his book as my contribution to the number 10 library. So, the answer is I did enjoy it, and I still, obviously I have had a very busy life and I've got a pile of books I've still got to read, but I still do read a lot of history.
Thank you. I understand it was something of a surprise though to find yourself in charge of education in 1989. What were your chief concerns in relation to the development of the national curriculum?
Well, can I first of all take up the point about a surprise? If you mean by that I didn't expect to do education, I don't think so. I didn't expect there to be a reshuffle at the time. And I was in the middle of a very intensive agricultural negotiation in Brussels, you know, the common agricultural policy, that were absolutely at the height of it. And if I remember rightly, the Prime Minister rang me up as I was going out to Brussels for the final negotiations in the CAP, which is going to be 3 or 4 all-night sessions, and said that she was going to make some changes. I was literally at the airport when she rang. And she very much wanted me to go to education, which of course had been one of her previous cabinet responsibilities. But she didn't want to take me away from agriculture while I was completing the negotiations. So I found myself for a short period in two different cabinet posts together, although I didn't come to education until I'd completed it. So that was a surprise because I was totally focused on agriculture at the time. Chief concerns in relation to the development of the national curriculum. Kenneth Baker had taken through that major act, of which the national curriculum was a major part, and it was really my job to implement it. And I think the chief concerns were how one got the rigour of the national curriculum while leaving a lot of areas for the professional judgment of teachers and teachers' skills. That was one concern. And the second concern was, and this was very relevant to history actually, but just about everywhere, we were trying to get, I used to say a quart into a pint pot. Actually, it was like a 3-gallon tank into a pint pot, because everyone in whatever discipline, every subject, took the national curriculum and all the working groups as an opportunity to have their view of whatever it was, whichever disciplines they were in. It applied right across the board, actually. Predominant. So there was a huge task in boiling it all down. But then, leaving enough time within the teaching day to include all the subjects. And of course, this was a difficulty with history and some other subjects, to keep them alive within the curriculum and not have them sidelined, but not to overcram the curriculum so that it became unworkable. And that was, I've explained it very broadly, but implementing that was quite a task. And of course, there were many, many experts to help, but it was a huge job.
At the time, the History Working Group had just produced their interim report for consideration by ministers. What political difficulties did the proposals for the History National Curriculum present?
It was quite interesting, actually, because when I came back from Brussels, I had a long chat with Kenneth Baker about the issues that were running and then in the department. And the one that was prominent and immediate was the History Working Group interim report, because Kenneth Baker had been thinking it through and working on it. And one of the issues was that the Prime Minister was particularly interested also in the history. And I should think I would say about four-fifths of the work had been done by the time I got there to publish it. But of course, there was a lot of interest in not only in the teaching community, but more widely in this report. And I knew I had to work very quickly on it. And it was actually the first thing I really concentrated on, because we wanted to get it out as quickly as possible. Commander Michael Saunders Watson, who was the chairman, who incidentally I thought was very good, he did a superb job, because it was a very difficult job to pull all these historians together. I was very busy in the constituency, so the weekend, it was, if I remember rightly, it must have been late July, early August. Mm-hmm. And the only way we could meet was in my home in the constituency, so he had to come dashing across on a Sunday afternoon. It was a lovely day, we sat in the garden and worked it all through. So it was a bit of a rush to get it all agreed. Now, the political difficulties, there were really, I think, 3 years. I'd like to go back beyond just the interim report and talk about, I think, the broader difficulty of that faced the History Working Group and certainly faced us as ministers. And this is that there was, of course, a lot of disagreements among historians as to what should be in the curriculum, the approach to the teaching and what it should be. Of course, a lot of judgment comes into the interpretation of history, and that applies rather more than in some of the other subjects that were, you know, like mathematics and so on, that were the other working groups. It was, I think, once described to me that the world of historian specialists was a volatile world, and it was certainly clear that it was a major task, I think, for the working group to pull these together, and for us. It was quite a small group, the History Working Group, and it was, I think, quite a job which Kenneth Baker had to try to do.
Was it actually smaller than the other working
group? No, but it was small in to try and incorporate all the various strands of history and the different approaches to its teaching, because there were, I think you must be aware, there were sort of various disagreements among historians and among teachers as to the teaching of history and how much it is based on fact and empathy and all those sort of issues. So the first point, I think, I wouldn't so much describe it as a political difficulty, I'd describe it as a difficulty, was pulling these strands together. And subsequently, that's why I had to spend so much time in consultation on the report, rather more than other subjects, to try to get some agreement. The second problem, which was again not a political difficulty, was I think there was a general recognition about the decline of the teaching of history in schools, and the challenge was how it could be reversed, particularly evident in primary schools. But I remember at the time seeing a lot of papers to me and so on, giving clear evidence that history had lost its place in many schools, and therefore the desire was to get this re-established. So I think these were the two background difficulties. The political difficulty, the difficulty is probably too strong a word. Some of the issues that had to be resolved, and particularly the Prime Minister took a great interest in this, were the Actually, I got one other wider difficulty I'll come back to, but on the political difficulty, there were three basic issues actually which we had to resolve, and which I do believe we did resolve. One was the insistence on some sort of chronology framework within the whole process from the working group. The second was the role of British history and how much emphasis there should be on that. And the third, which was, I think, the most difficult technically, was that I think there was general agreement, certainly absolutely general agreement between Kenneth Baker and myself and the Prime Minister about the importance of factual knowledge and not just interpretation, factual knowledge in the curriculum. The difficult issue was how that factual knowledge was embedded, and there was a lot of toing and froing of the working group, which I think we actually eventually got right, as to whether it should be in the attainment targets or the programmes of study. So those were the issues, I think. I just come back to one wider difficulty, which I've already mentioned, but I put it in the context of the History Working Group, and that is those wider problems of implementing the whole national curriculum, the 3-gallon tank, whatever it is, into a pint pot, and how much emphasis you could give to this and to that. And the issue of, particularly in history, over-prescription within the final working group recommendations and our acceptance of them, the over-prescription against teachers' judgment and skills. I actually was, as Secretary of State, very strongly in favour of greater encouragement of the many, many good teachers I met everywhere. And wanted to develop a teaching council and all those sort of issues. But it was very relevant here because, I mean, certainly in my own experience, I've been extremely lucky in having two very, very good teacher and a professor in history. And there was not only the emphasis on the facts and so on, but a huge amount, how can I put it, I just gained so much from their skills and their judgment. And so it was that problem about how you overprescribed in the detail of the programmes of study and yet left enough space for teaching judgment. So I think those were the background issues, and by no means all of them were political.
No. Did you actually get to meet a number of teachers during the periods of consultation?
Yes, but also I went around schools a lot. I can't tell you now how much we discussed history, I can't remember, but there were also so many things going on at the time. We certainly had a lot about, I mean, I think actually one of the biggest problems and complaints from the many good teachers, head teachers and all the rest of it, was, and you've seen it in spades subsequently, was the amount of directions and bump and everything else that was coming out of the department. And my sympathies were actually very much with the teachers on this, because I think we were producing too much. I'll mention something, it's not relevant to the history teaching group, but it's something I've often quoted. This was a common complaint, so I used to have regular meetings, or two or three, I don't know how many meetings with officials on the subject. I remember one official saying to me, well, Secretary of State, it's just not true, we don't put an awful lot out into the schools. So I said to my principal private secretary, this was in Waterloo House, and we had a huge long windowsill. I said, I just want to put on the windowsill everything that's going out to the schools, every week. It grew enormously, and it really made the point. So, but this had a tiny relevance to the History Working Group, in that one didn't want to bombard the schools with too much.
Of the three issues that you've identified, the chronology, the British history, and the assessment of knowledge, do you think any one of those was a big issue, a major issue for you or Mrs. Thatcher?
We felt in the... you're talking about my letter of 10th August 1989 to the History Working Group.
Yes, I am. Yeah.
And actually, could I just say that given that I had only just been appointed, I think, for about 10 days, it was a pretty swift response, which I think indicates that... And the response reflected both my views and the Prime Minister's views. So I think that it indicated that we resolved those pretty quickly as the issues we wanted the History Working Group to look at rather further. The upshot in the final report was And actually, indeed, the response that the group gave to my letter, the upshot was that chronology in British history turned out not to be a problem. They were quite easily resolved. British history, if I remember rightly, in the final report, I was able to say to the Prime Minister that at least 50, more than 50% of the curriculum was British history, and that just solved that one. Chronology ran through it. The difficult one was the factual knowledge as against and where it should be placed. I think there was general agreement that, you know, there had to be a strong basis in fact, but the question was whether it should be in the attainment targets or the programmes of study. Now, it sounds a very technical issue, but it was backwards and forwards, and in the end, there were one or two changes made to the text of the report to highlight the importance of factual knowledge right at the beginning of the report. But in the end, I think that we were convinced by the History Working Group, I certainly was, and the Prime Minister was, I have to say, I was convinced that in this case, in history, it was better to have the detail of the factual knowledge in the programmes of study and not in the attainment targets. We were convinced by the working group. So that in the end, there was a broad agreement from the group, and certainly from me, and certainly from the Prime Minister, to the final outcome of the report. She was very satisfied with the final outcome as well. And what I think really demonstrated the importance of such attention to it was that, I think slightly to my surprise, the response from nearly all the professional historians to the final report was very favourable. And it was unanimous from teachers. You know, I went out and had a consultation period just to make sure we got this right, which is not always done. I'm very glad I did, because it did demonstrate the huge support there was for the final report.
Did you feel at the time that some of the pressure was coming from the media and from lobby groups, and that added to the problems that you faced?
From the media, I can't remember all the detail now. I may have got this wrong, but I would think one of the pressure problems from the media was that they knew I had got the final report. And I think they were anxious, actually, that the interim report, there was a lot of press reports about the interim report being delayed. It was mainly delayed because of the change of Secretary of State. I took over just in the sort of final bits of consideration of it, and I wanted to be sure that I was happy, which is how I had this terribly urgent meeting with Michael Saunders Watson. And in fact, we responded to that quite quickly. That was the main media pressure. And again, later, with the final report, you know, sort of things about when's it coming out. Well, the delays were to try and get it right. And in the end, I think it really proved itself to be worthwhile. And also, I think there was some criticism from the media of the final report where I went out to final consultation of it, but I've explained why I did that, and I'm quite sure that that was sensible, because it drew all the strands together. From the you mean teachers, really, basically?
Yes. And some right-wing groups that were, you know, the Campaign for Real Education,
yeah,
and the Historic History Curriculum Association.
We're back to the issue, I think, that I raised at the very beginning about a whole range of historian specialists in a volatile world. It was inevitable that there should be people who wanted to have a particular point of view expressed and carried through in the final version. And it wasn't only in history. I think I've said already, but I certainly found that in other subjects too, but very much in history, the individual groups with a particular view saw it as an opportunity to try and get their view implanted in the curriculum. So that, you know, there were all these issues to be resolved. And it took quite a bit of time, but I don't regret giving it the time to try and pull it together.
At the end of the day, do you think that the teachers' views were, if you like, the critical factor that swung acceptance of the final report?
Define teachers in this context.
Well, I suppose I'm thinking of the final consultation, when obviously submissions were received.
Yes.
Quite a lot of submissions, I think.
Yes, and we did make, and I think I've got it here actually somewhere in the final press release, we did make some changes to the final report of the working group. I would argue that none of them were fundamental. but they were important changes. One of the important changes actually was to reduce the amount of content in the programmes of study, because I think one of the criticisms from the teachers was that it was just too much. It was over-prescriptive and didn't leave enough room for interpretation and judgment and so on. And I agreed with that, and we did make some changes to accommodate that. I think that was probably the main final comment after the report had been published and before we finally agreed it. And that was teachers. But as I say, most professional historians who were not necessarily teachers were reasonably happy with the final report.
Just going back to the idea of having a knowledge test, which had originally been Mrs. Thatcher's preferred approach, hadn't it? Do you think it would have been possible, even if the History Working Group had wanted, to produce an agreed set of essential facts of history?
No. It depends what you mean by essential facts of history. I mean, obviously, with having quite a strong emphasis in the programmes of study on facts, there was a strong emphasis on having factual knowledge as the basis for interpretation and so on. But if you mean by essential facts of history, it should be these 10. No. And nor did we ever wish to. I mean, I had, at one point when we were, I seem to recall, if I've got this right, when we were, there was a bit of a debate about the place of facts in the final outcome. One or two people suggested that we were trying to impose our essential political essential facts of history on the curriculum. There was never any intention of that. It was to have that factual basis, as in every other discipline, have that factual basis, but to have our view of what the facts, which facts should be highlighted. No, that was never intended, because that would be, how should I put it? I think that would have been impossible to do. It would have been a politically imposed sense of, and that was never our place, and nor should it be.
The emphasis on British history implies, though, that there are certain criteria about the essential knowledge that children should leave school with.
Yes, and it wasn't just us. I mean, I think there was a very strong feeling, actually, in the working group itself, about the importance of having a good element of British history. So I don't think, in the end, that wasn't controversial. And it was only a question, right from the beginning, of just getting the balance right.
So why do you think history was such a difficult subject for which to produce a national curriculum specifically?
I think all of them were quite difficult, for the reasons I gave at the beginning. But history, I think, because there is so much element of judgment in the way in which you wish to teach things, I mean, in the teaching profession. And I very well understand, for primary school children and so on, having it based on local history and the element of judgment there is a way of instilling enthusiasm into history among pupils. But it was really, on that aspect, it was to try, as I said before, to try and get the right balance between ensuring that there was a proper grounding in facts and knowledge and interpretation of facts, as well as just interpreting as seen from a 20th century viewpoint. So that was one difficulty. The other I've already referred to, which was that there were all sorts of people with different points of view of how history should be taught, and, you know, ranging from the empathy and so on to the others you've described. So it was how do I describe it? I think a period when it was a subject where everyone had a viewpoint. And I really do think it was a tremendous tribute to the working group that they pulled all that together. And at the end, we had a unanimous report, which was pretty widely accepted with the small change, some of the changes I made at the end. I know how hard they worked. They really did work their socks off. And Michael Saunders-Wilson did a terrific job.